My name's Stephen Neal, pastor at Alden Bethel Church and blogger at Building Jerusalem.
And my name's Stephen Watkinson, church planter in Rochdale and blogger at Northern Souls.
So last time we were talking a bit about how lots of books and so on and what's recommended isn't really written.
Hang on a second. Sorry.
So we were talking last time about how lots of books and resources aren't written at a very accessible level, particularly for those of us who do ministry in more deprived areas. So imagine that you've got someone who's quite interested, who's grown a lot, who you're thinking about for leadership in some way, maybe to be an elder or something like that. What do you do to help them train?
At the moment, I guess a standard model in your churches is you get them to a certain point, you do a lot of work with them, and those that you want to train into ministry roles, you send them off to a Bible college. I frankly wouldn't do that at the moment because I don't really feel there's anywhere I could send them where it'd be helpful. I think at best I would send someone away who could engage with that stuff, and then they would come back preaching and teaching in a way that's not very contextually helpful. Or I think you would send people away and you'd find they don't engage brilliantly, because the model that we tend to have at our colleges at the moment is, here's your reading list, here's your essay title, off you go. We'll give you lectures where, you know, we kind of give you some idea around some points, but effectively take the lectures, take your reading, write me an essay, and if your essay is half decent, you get to pass the course, and we'll say you're then trained to be a preacher and a teacher. But given that we said people in our communities don't tend to access the books that are available at the moment very well anyway, and most of what's written is not written for our community, it's written more for middle class churches, I think the same is true of training, where most training is geared up for people who are used to that sort of academic approach and are used to a middle class approach, if you like, to training in general. So I'm not convinced there's anywhere at the moment I'd want to send anybody. So then your next option is to go, is there somewhere in context I can do that, which I think is preferable for our communities. I think we'd rather keep our people in our churches and then send them to a college like a day or two a week to train. But again, I think what they then get taught and the way they get taught at college isn't always super helpful, really. And I think we maybe need to just readjust the way we think about training people altogether.
So would you, as it stands, broadly do something in-house? Or maybe sort of buy bits in, but do most of it in-house?
Yeah, I think I probably would try and do it in-house on the whole. I might send somebody out to do a day a week on a course of some sort where they get their sort of theological input in classroom or something, and then they come back and put that into effect in context. I might do that, but again, of the folks I know who do that, and I do know some working class guys doing that, they struggle even with that setup because they're basically given lots of reading to do in a short space of time, are asked to collate that into essays very quickly or written work. And I just don't think the job of a pastor is collating information in a written form that you then disseminate out to people for their views on it. That's generally not what a pastor's being employed to do. And so why we think that's the best way to train them for a job where they're never really going to do that seems a mistake to me. Let's put it that way. And the best arguments I've ever heard from people who like to run that model are, but academic essays can surely teach you something. And I think, yeah, they can teach you something. It's just whether that something is the best thing for a pastor. to be able to do and to be able to show their knowledge and to be able to show they're working or not, or whether we've got better vocational ways of training people. And I think there probably are.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, there are, I mean, it could explain some people's preaching. If that's what, you know, if that's your model, you collate a load of stuff from commentaries and then you regurgitate it in a form that you then ask for people's opinion. Oh, that's some people's preaching, I guess, isn't it?
Well, actually, they effectively footnote their preaching a lot of the time too. So rather than just say, here's what the passage is saying, they'll quote people and they'll have to tell you where the quotes come from as well. So not only do you get sermons littered with fairly dull quotes anyway, they then, because they feel it's sort of academically wrong not to, have to tell you about where it's come from as well and who said it and why they said it. And it does just feel like they're reading out an essay, and it's tedious at best.
That's interesting. As an aside, I remember reading some stuff around people reckoning that you know, sort of plagiarism in sermons. You know, the sort of idea that if you were kind of using someone else's work, you needed to footnote it in your sermon, sort of thing. You're kind of thinking, well, I'm not publishing it. It seemed a very academic understanding of what you were doing in preaching.
But I would say just take their words or their idea and just work it into your own language, because the way it's written in a book is never how I would say it anyway. And people forget that. I'm not writing anything, I'm speaking. So I may have written down what I'm going to say on a piece of paper, but I've written it down so that I remember what I'm going to say. And when you speak to people, you don't speak in the way that you write. Or at least if you do, then you're doing one of them wrong, aren't you?
It's interesting, isn't it, that a lot of that sort of academic stuff seems to bleed into ministry. And, you know, while there's value in some of the rigor side of it, I think that's probably where I would say there's value in the academic model, where that's done well, where it teaches people to be precise and to think clearly. That's good.
I don't think it does, though, does it? I'm not convinced that's what it does.
That's why I said where it does that. If I'm being really brutal, my computer science degree and PhD taught me to do that, not my theological training. But that's, I wouldn't wish to comment on the arts in general. But
I would say, you see, we have a problem in theological education, and it's this. I did a history and politics degree at a secular university, and that was taught in a particular way. I then jumped onto a master's degree doing theology at a theological college, and I literally swapped the books over. That was it. The way it was taught, what I was asked to do, frankly, the skills that I developed were identical. The reason why they were happy for me to jump from one subject to the other is because basically they were the same. It's just the subject matter was different. Now, if you're training people for the academy, that's absolutely fine. There's no problem with that. And I'm very glad that we have good evangelical scholars who do that. They're quite why you'd want to go to an Oak Hill Union, King's, Moorlands or whatever in order to go and be an academic. I don't know. You would normally just go to Manchester or to Liverpool or to wherever you want to get your degree from. But what we've got is that model, but then we're sending people into a job where the things we're training them to do are not directly applicable or relevant, because I don't write essays to my church members and I don't sit down with 10 books around me, summarize everything those books have said, offer a conclusion on all the stuff I've read, and then go and parrot that back to them with no application. I don't write illustrations into my academic essays because they're not really necessary. And I certainly didn't sort of apply it in the way I would apply a sermon. Normally I was just analyzing text, analyzing events, analyzing things, and then going, based on that analysis, here are some conclusions I draw from that. Because they're two very different things. And it's kind of the difference between training a nurse by only ever sticking them in a classroom with books and training a nurse by sticking them in a hospital and telling them to shove cannulas in people's arms. I mean, they're two very different skills, and I can learn all about cannulas from a book, but that's not the same as actually doing it. And I think we confuse those two things.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's having kind of gone through an Anglican setup, the principle was, more recently, not really when in older times, but the principle was you went to college and did your academic stuff, maybe for 2 years, maybe for three. And then you did your curacy, which was your apprenticeship broadly. And the irony was that when I went through my curacy, they were making it more and more, the training, the sort of qualification bit of it, if you like, was becoming more and more academic. So I was signed up for a master's and I didn't finish it. I got a diploma or something. But and there seems to be that tendency. I think there was a pushback because it does feel like there needs to be more apprenticeship side of it in terms of learning how to do stuff rather than, I mean, that's sort of what you're describing. I know nurse, you don't talk about nurses as apprentices and stuff.
But so it's, it's vocational training. That's the
vocational
point.
Yeah.
So, well, I agree, nursing isn't apprentice per se, but actually that model would work quite well. When I was a teacher, for example, I was doing teacher training, and again, that was vocational training. We did a little bit of stuff in a classroom, but most of it wasn't. Most of it was, look, here are some tools you need. So you know how to read a book. So go and read a history book to learn what you need to teach the kids about the Civil War. You can read that yourself. We don't need to teach you that. What we need to teach you is, how do you go from having this knowledge about the Civil War or whatever it is you're teaching to physically making a lesson that then teaches children? And actually, if you look at it, teaching would probably be the closest vocation to what we are doing in the pastorate. I know lots of people like to make analogies between, you know, soul winning and doctors or whatever, but I mean, let's be realistic. And actually what we are principally training people to do is teach people the Bible, and we're training people to try and form believers up to maturity in Christ. And that the closest secular parallel is probably teaching. And the way I was taught on my PGCE was not the way I was taught on my undergrad degree. And yet the way I was taught in my college was exactly as I was taught on my undergrad degree and nothing like I was taught on my PGCE. And that strikes me as the problem.
So it's funny, in my sort of college bit, it was a bit more mixed. So there was, there were elements of the, that sort of teacher training side of it. And I suppose it's complicated in a way, isn't it? So, what someone might say is, that's all very well, but Steve, you were going to go and teach history. You'd already done a degree in history. And now they were teaching you how to teach what you'd already done.
But that's straightforward, isn't it? Because you're basically going, okay, so you've been in a church, haven't you? What have you been doing for the 20 years you're in your church before they sent you to college, right?
Yeah.
We just sit on your hands.
And I think that's an interesting question, isn't it? Because I wonder if we've got two sort of levels of failure, if you like. And one is that we are outsourcing what is the church's job to a college. In discipleship, isn't it? I mean, I know it's discipleship maybe beyond the sort of, you know, the person who's going to be the elder, the pastor needs to be a kind of example. But in the outsourcing of it, it sort of suggests, what have you been doing in church for the last 10 years, whatever? Maybe we're sending people too fast off in the first place. So if they really haven't got the knowledge in the first place, then they're not, we don't really know whether they are suitable for ministry, but maybe we haven't been teaching them. And that could be a problem. You know, there could be sort of multiple, you know, problems that we've set ourselves into this. Oh, well, you send them to college and therefore we're not going to do any of the reading through Bavinck.
Yeah, because that's vital. I wouldn't employ anyone if they hadn't read through Bavinck, you know.
At least Calvin.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Jesus never read them, but still. but yeah, I think what we do is we basically outsource stuff to colleges, and colleges make it all academic. And then we send people back to their churches and expect them to do a vocational job off the back of that theoretic academic training. And I think that's a mistake. What I want a college to do is to give people the tools that I can't give them in my local church so easily. So do I, for example, have the wherewithal to train people in the biblical languages in my church in the midst of everyday ministry? No, not very easily. Is that something that might be useful for them? Yes, I guess it would be. And therefore, maybe I want them to go to college to do that. Do I give them some basic sort of hermeneutic tools? Yes. Do I have the time to give them, you know, an in-depth level of hermeneutics to handle the Bible really well, to a degree? But again, I think that's something that a college could help with. But the principle behind vocational training on the whole is you're training people to a task. You're not training people in theory. And that's where I think we go wrong. And actually, I think why in context training is quite important, because if you train people in theory in a classroom, that's fine. You can do that anywhere. But if you train people to a task, then actually you also need to train them to a context that they're going to go into. So I think we don't tend to train missionaries, for example, in the same way that we train pastors. There's sort of crossover, but that's not the same, because we're training them to slightly different tasks. Well, I think actually if you're training pastors to particular contexts, it would help to train them in that context, or at least give them one foot in that context, whilst they're doing some of the stuff that you can't do in that context in college. But I'm not convinced everything we do at college is vital. I'm not convinced sending someone away for 3 years out of your context is ultimately to their benefit of coming back to that context. And I think we need to seriously rethink, are we just teaching people how to write essays effectively? Or are we teaching them how to genuinely do the tasks that they'd be expected to do in ministry?
Yeah, and there's something as well in terms of, so if you think of your model of nursing or medicine or teaching or whatever, the value of, well, you could even think of it biblically.
Be good, wouldn't it? Value,
yeah, well, you know. But I suppose you think of Jesus and the disciples, Paul and his co-workers and that kind of thing. Mm. You work with practitioners.
Yes.
And so one of the problems that colleges can have is that they become more and more distant from the practitioners. So the problem is, if you're a full-time college lecturer or whatever it is, you may be really involved in your church, which is good. And you know, you may even have quite a lot of ministry experience in the past, which is even better. And I think that's quite, you know, having a staff that is balanced with a lot of ministry experience would be really important. But even if that's true, if you're working full time for the college, you're not a practitioner anymore. And that's not what happens. So, I don't know loads about kind of teach training and, but within the more kind of medicine and stuff like that, you're not taught by doctors who are full-time teachers, you know, sort of doctor teachers. You're taught by people in hospitals and things like that. I think that would be my understanding. And that feels like you need a bit more of that as well, doesn't it? So yeah, I think it's great. And people who are going to teach languages probably need to be you know, using them, and having a few of those people sort of who are really good at that, brilliant. But broadly, you know, if you're thinking about teaching pastoral counseling or ethics or, you know, some of those kind of aspects of ministry, say, then you kind of want someone who's at the sharp end of doing it, don't you?
Well, I'll give you an example. There was one college that was running an urban ministry sort of module. And we said, great, you know, we could be really helpful with that. That's exactly what we're doing. And we were told, no, actually, that of all the modules, that's the one you have to do at the college. Now, the college isn't in an urban context, and it wasn't being run by someone who was a minister in an urban context. So what they were suggesting was taking people out of the urban context that we were in to go to a college not in an urban context, to learn from a person who's not a pastor in an urban context, to teach them theory about urban context ministry. And they could not grasp that that was perhaps a bit silly. You know, they couldn't see that perhaps that wouldn't be the best way to train somebody to do urban ministry. And it was just, you know, getting their head around the fact that that isn't going to work was not on the agenda for discussion, really. And that would be probably the clearest example I have of what I'm talking about, where we are more interested in teaching theory than we are practice. And what we are trying to train are practitioners. So, I mean, I would not want to be touched by a doctor who hadn't been in a hospital up to the point where he was doing something to me in a hospital. I mean, nobody wants to be operated on, do they, by a surgeon who's only ever read about surgery in books. It doesn't take a genius to see that. And yet routinely we take people out of their ministry context, teach them a lot of theory in a college, and then send them back and go, okay, go on, you're trained now. And I don't think that works. I don't.
So it's interesting as well, isn't it? I think there's something that I can see. Say, there's a logic, isn't there, in saying, in my local church, I cannot provide for everything to train you. And so you can see the idea. I'm interested, I don't entirely know how colleges grew up and stuff, but I mean, it's a bit weird in England, probably because of Oxford and Cambridge and things like that. But you can see a logic of kind of a local area, all the churches getting together and going, right, we have a few people that we want to train, and actually we want to train them in ways that we'd all be happy to have them and all that kind of thing, depending on where they'd be most useful. And between us, we've got a bunch of resources, and therefore it seems quite a good idea that we share the training of these people. And you can sort of see that the logic of going to what then becomes almost like a college. What gets difficult, I think, is if then that's cut away from, that sort of, this is a bunch of local churches organizing to train their people, as opposed to now is this independent thing that we send them off to train. And I can understand the need for, you know, one of the things that was valuable about going to college was that there were people there who were really good at specific things that you never would have got in a local church. You know, whether that's biblical languages or whether they'd had the time to really delve into systematics or something like that. That's really valuable. It's the disconnect, isn't it, between that and practice and a local church that can create all kinds of issues. Because if they start acting independently, then me as the local church minister, I'm going, well, okay, but now you're doing something that I don't really want to send my person. You know, like what you're saying, you've got a model of assessment that doesn't work for me or whatever.
Yeah.
And because you're not connected to me anymore, I it's out of my kind of remit to say anything.
Yeah. And I think what we need to do is rebuild from the ground up. So I think what we need to do is say, number one, what are we actually trying to train? What are we trying to train people to do? What are the outcomes we are hoping to get from our training? Once you've worked out what you're actually hoping to have by the end of your training, you can then take a step back and say, okay, well, what's the best way to assess somebody as to whether I have attained those outcomes or not? And then once you work that out, you then take another step back and say, given that's how I'm going to assess them for that thing, what's the best way to teach people so that they can pass that assessment, and so that when they pass the assessment, I can say at the end of it, you are now properly trained in X thing. And for me, the answer, write an academic essay, is not the answer to anything I want to see a pastor trained in particularly. I want to see preaching assessed by people preaching, and I want to see pastoral ministry and pastoral counsel assessed by people going to real people and with another pastor and going, let me counsel you, and then you assess that afterwards. I want to see people engaging with Muslim people and showing that they understand doctrine that's important, not by writing an essay about it, but in their discussion with those people, that they faithfully defend certain doctrines in a context where defending those doctrines matters. I want to see people, actually, I think it'd be more valuable teaching pastors sometimes how to budget for a church, not something that colleges often teach them, but they spend all this time on stuff that's very often not that applicable to the context. And then they get in and find there's a whole host of things, building maintenance and budgeting and things like that, that the average little church, the pastor has to have some grasp of that stuff, but they've never been taught to do it before. You know, some of that stuff would be more valuable than, you know, getting your head stuck in certain very abstruse points of theology that you might write your dissertation on, and you may have 30,000 words to write on it, but at the end of the day, you'll never get asked about that again. You know, I wrote a dissertation on my master's. Have I ever been asked by anyone in my church about any part of it? Of course I haven't. You know, the only time it's valuable is if someone starts sounding off on Twitter about something, and I can go, you know, I've got a qualification in that and I can say something clever, but it's not actually that valuable for my day-to-day ministry. Never been asked about it.
One of the interesting things, you know, talking about rebuilding from the ground up, it strikes me that given certain things that been happening in the church in terms of, you know, decline, basically, given actually what's just happened in terms of the coronavirus and things like that, even from what I've seen in some of the guys in America writing stuff about their big colleges that are going to struggle to keep going in the way that they've been doing, it may be that we're about to hit a time where we are going to have to rebuild from the ground up anyway.
Well, the American colleges have, of course, some of this problem too. I mean, a friend of mine said he looked at an American college, a well-known president of an American seminary, said something to the effect of, we want to be training the very best pastors we can train. Next sentence, therefore, we offer PhD programs. So basically saying, unless you've got a PhD, you're not the best pastor that you're going to have. Now, in my experience, having a PhD is irrelevant to how good a pastor you're going to be. It might be good for academia. It might be good on a CV. It might be nice to have the word doctor at the front of your name. But ultimately, it has no relevance to whether you're going to be a good pastor or not. And yet that is the kind of messaging you get. And even in UK colleges, where typically they're not actually doing PhDs in our evangelical colleges, they'll push you all onto the masters. So you'll do your BTH and they'll push you onto the MTH. And ultimately, what difference does that MTH really give you when you're in the thick of ministry? Does it give you any distinctive value as a minister? And 9 times out of 10, the answer to that is no. I mean, it allows you to write in academic journals, none of which your people will be reading, you know, unless you're in a very specific kind of church that are few and far between. No one is going to be reading that in your church. No one cares that you're going to be writing. Now, I've written academic essays for theological journals. No one in my church has ever read them. And it's not really done a vast amount for my ministry particularly. You know, might make a handful of academics see my name one time when they read it in passing. But ultimately, for ministry purposes, what value has that actually given me? Is that what we want to train people to do? I just don't see that's what we want.
Well, the thing is tricky. I could see one value in it, which if it was actually improving your skills that you needed. So you can imagine a PhD that might do that. So you can imagine a PhD that really honed your exegetical skills, really got you better at handling the Bible. You can imagine that. And you can sort of see that, and that would be the kind of argument that's made, isn't it? The argument that would be made would be something like you are doing a deep dive on something that in doing that, you will get loads of skills out of it. And there's some truth in that. The question is that the way to get the skills? And that, I think, particularly the amount of time that something like a PhD would take, especially if you're going to do it while you're a pastor or something like that. And especially, being brutal, especially the kind of PhDs that lots of pastors seem to do, where they're not doing that at all. They're doing a deep dive into some historical, you know, figure of the church, something like that. And bar making their church miserable because every illustration for the next 10 years is going to come from, you know, some bloke they've never heard of. It's not totally useless. They've learnt some stuff. There are some historical skills, whatever, but it's a bit of an interesting use of time.
I'd say it's not totally useless in the sense that nothing is totally useless. Very, very little.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But as you say, is that the most useful thing you could be doing?
Probably. And you would love to see training. I mean, yeah, you know, I look back at some of my curator training, which, you know, was in the Church of England, was hopeless. But there was real scope to do some useful things with us in that. Some things where, you know, you were drawing a bunch of people at the same level together who were maybe just trying stuff in ministry. You were doing it with some more experienced ministry people, and you could have done some really useful stuff talking. And we did bits, but do you know what I mean? Where you were really thinking about what you were doing and evaluating it and trying something, and, you know, it, that kind of thing could have been really beneficial. Whereas what I actually had to do, even in my curacy, was write essays.
And I think I'm not against people having to write anything at all. But what I do think is, if you are going to get people to write stuff, I would have thought, again, we did this on my PGCE, where often it would be, right, your task is to go and counsel a child in the room, you know, give some pastoral care or whatever. One of your tasks was to write a little 500 word reflection on how did that go? You know, what did you do? What went well? And what could you have done better? You know, a very simple exercise. I think that sort of thing's fine, because what you're then doing is reflecting on practice, not just reflecting on theory. And so I think what I would like to see is training where people go and do pastoral ministry and then maybe write reflections on what they've done, saying, I could have done this better, or this went really well. And then you see them the next time when they do the reflection, they went, I did that thing I thought would go better and it did go better. Or I did that thing I thought would go better and it didn't go very well at all. So actually next time I do something entirely different again. You know, but that's how you train people in a vocational ministry.
And interestingly, in that curacy training stuff, in the time that I then went, because I had a curate, and, you know, it was actually moving back towards that as a model. And essentially they were learning that from, you know, those more vocational training contexts, and partly because there'd been a load of complaints from people going, why are we, you know, why are we doing all this? I could see, I do think there's value in helping people engage with theology and with languages and with biblical exegesis and all that kind of stuff. And I think having people who are good at that, doing that, is great. I think not then helping them link that into actual ministry. That's the, you know, the key is you've got to then go, okay, so I know my Greek and I know how to use that. Well, I mean, one of the key things is I then know how to use that to prepare my sermon, Bible study, whatever it is. And I then prepare my sermon, Bible study, and I, you know, I can talk to you about how I've done that. and I can write my reflection on it. And then I do my sermon Bible study and I get a bit of feedback and I think about it a bit myself. And then I come and talk to you about it, whether it's my tutor or my group of people or whatever. That's how I might actually move forward in terms of my ability to do stuff. Actually, it's the kind of thing that we lack in kind of, you know, like most careers, you have continuing development, don't you?
Yeah.
And again, we don't do that at all, do we? And basically, we just kind of are left to it. For.
Yeah. And I just think the answer is to go, what are the tasks that a pastor is going to be doing?
What are we trying to do?
Then go, how do we teach that? How do we assess that? What's the best way to do it? And if we did that work and we still come up with the answer, well, it's by basically reading a lot of books and then writing an academic essay, I don't think we're engaging with that question meaningfully.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think the thing that you'd worry about is that we've never really asked that question very clearly. What are we trying to do? And how are we going to do that?
Or worse, we have asked that question and the answer we've come up with is we want to mimic secular university models.
But like you said, even that's weird, isn't it? Because we only want to mimic one side. We want to mimic a kind of the academic study rather than the vocational training.
Vocational colleges historically, though, weren't universities, were they? So vocational typically was in the... was in the polytechnics, and then the academic stuff was in the universities. And what we've done is gone, we want to mimic the universities.
And that may be a whole load of issues about, particularly in the UK anyway, of those roots in Oxbridge that so much of the church has had.
I think partly that, and probably partly also a desire for academic credibility. So as evangelicals, we have a bit of a complex that people don't take us seriously. And so then we think we'll be taken more seriously by getting academic credibility. But then, of course, we go and do our training at places like Oak Hill and Union. And this is no disrespect to them, but most people would go, what's an Oak Hill? What Union what? You know, and then they go, I got my theological degree from Oxford, Cambridge, Manchester, York, wherever. And they're normal universities people have heard of. And therefore, the desire for the academic credibility, we don't actually get from those who we want credibility in their eyes. And so we've wedded ourselves to a model to get something that we can't get. And the model isn't fit for purpose.
Yeah, and broadly, that's wasting our time anyway, isn't it? If, you know, again, it's about what's your goal. So your goal is to reach the country with the gospel and to make disciples. And if that's your goal, academic credibility is not really any part of that goal. I remember reading somewhere, it described that there's, you know, if you're going to do the academic theology thing as an evangelical, you're never going to get the credibility. So you need to do the, I think he talked about being academically responsible rather than academically credible. So you do the work and you do, you know, if you're going to do the academic thing, you do the work, you do it right. And you're responsible, but then, you know, it's a fool's game to think that liberals are going to go, oh yeah, well, you know, he's all right. I mean, he's an evangelical, but he's all right. You know, all that means is that they think you've compromised.